Like 40 miles of bad road, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The hydroxychloroquine of Medicare podcasts. And now, a man who once cured his hiccups by waterboarding himself, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This is, in case my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, has not yet told you, Doug Jones, your Medicare specialist or your Medicare expert. I'm a little confused today because since the last time we spoke, I have transformed myself into an Illinoisan, at least for the summer. I spent 5 days on the road from last Monday until last Friday, driving from Arizona, Cave Creek, Arizona, to Austin, Texas, to visit Junior at the Saxon Pub, where his business is located. He sells food to the Saxon Pub patrons. And from Austin, we drove straight north up to Wayne, Illinois, west of Chicago. But why would we do this? Well, it's so that I can still continue to bring you Medicare information in a timely and interesting manner without the wife complaining about the summertime heat. She doesn't like Arizona in the summertime. I'd like it all year round, but that's a story for a different time. In any event, I encourage people to get to be comfortable with the idea of Medicare because most of my future customers, my clients, are going to be crossing that Medicare line at some point in the future. And in order to do that with the best results, I would suggest strongly that they go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and purchase a copy of my latest book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. This has all the information you're going to need about why you would sign up for Medicare, when you would sign up for Medicare, which parts of Medicare for which you would sign up, and what to do after that. And it'll tell you how much these things are likely to cost. That's why I write a different book every year. And ultimately, it's going to tell you how to contact the most trustworthy insurance guy in the world, that would be me, in order to acquire the coverages that you need that an insurance agent can provide for you. Those coverages aren't expensive, and I specialize in helping people obtain the best quality for the least cost. That's what I do. So I would encourage you to buy the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. Give it a read and then send me an email because my contact information is right there in the book. And we'll talk about your impending encounter with Medicare. And I will look forward to taking that little trip with you. And it will be a successful and very painless trip. You will enjoy the results, let me tell you. Speaking of results, I have a resulting connection with Randy Carson. It has been quite a while since we've talked because we have I've been traveling, and I don't know what he's been up to. Perhaps he'll tell us when I ask him to join us. Randy, would you join us, please, and tell us what you've been up to?
I will. I'm just wanting to tell the podcast audience. I've got a question, okay? And this isn't necessarily stump the insurance expert. It's a question about, given the fact that you normally live in Cave Creek up in the high altitudes.
In the high altitudes,
sometimes as high as 28,000 feet. Oh,
I've had it as high as 82,000 feet when you're in a bad mood.
That's true. So my question, Doug, is you're down just about sea level now, and the oxygen content will be a whole lot higher. Does it give you a headache when you have too much oxygen?
No, what happens is I feel more energetic for about 10 minutes and then I want to take a nap.
Oh, there you go.
Illinois is roughly, at least my area of Illinois, Wayne, Illinois, is about 35 miles west of Chicago. My house is located 33.188 miles west of State Street in Chicago. if anybody cares to plot it out that carefully. And frankly, our altitude here is, I think, about 700 feet, which is maybe the lowest altitude I've been, you know, in regularly since I met you.
Yeah, 700 feet, my God, that's like it. Compared to what you're normally at?
Yes, I know.
That's like the bottom of the Mariana Trench.
Exactly. It's oxygen rich, and it's
yes.
You know, if I need to do something and it wears me out, I recover more quickly than I do up in those upper elevations that you've had me located in.
I've noticed, you know, while we're chatting here, that you apparently only take a breath about once every 20 seconds because you get so much oxygen.
I don't need to breathe that often. When I do, it's an enriching experience, and I take fewer breaths. But, you know, for a guy that smoked millions of non-filter cigarettes for as long as I did, I'm still surprised that I'm able to breathe at all. If you listen to the medical community, they will tell you that smoking one cigarette will kill you. If you listen to the lawyers involved in the tobacco settlement, the guys who shared in the tobacco fines, they will tell you that smoking one cigarette in a room that's maybe the size of a football stadium, smoking one cigarette is going to kill half of the people that might be sharing that space with you. So the dire consequences have not hit me yet for smoking, but, you know, someday, who knows?
Well, I know that you were a heavy smoker, and as you know, I was also. I used to bring my smokes to my, when I was working, you know, in corporate America.
Sure.
I used to bring my smokes to work in an 18-wheeler, so.
Ah, well, there you go, and leave that parked right outside the door of the building.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, when I worked in Chicago for many, many years in the Loop, I was able to look out my office window and see a corner at the First National Bank of Chicago, which was acquired by Chase. All my accounts are still at the same bank, but now it's Chase instead of First National Bank of Chicago. And they did a couple of things in the summertime that I really loved. One was that they had a comely lass with a popcorn wagon. And she would just pass out free popcorn. I'm pretty sure it was free. There might have been a nominal charge, but boy, that was some yummy popcorn. And when I could see her wheeling that cart out there on a sunny, warm day in Chicago, man, I'd hit the elevator fast, get down there and grab a couple of containers of popcorn. And the other thing was that they had additional comely lasses giving away free samples of cigarettes. And these were probably brands that nobody ever heard of. It was tobacco companies doing some test marketing and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
But these girls would be out there, kind of like the girls you would see in old-time movies in nightclubs, and they'd walk around, call for, you know, that was a Philip Morris ad. It was, they would walk around with trays.
Oh, with a little tray with the strap around their neck?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So that's kind of what these girls in Chicago did. They had a whole bunch of like four packs of cigarettes, and they would just pass those suckers out to anybody walking by. So I had a lot of cigarettes that I wasn't really fond of, but then the girls in the office weren't that particular. So I would pass them out. I'd look like a hero passing them out to the girls that didn't go out for lunch.
Oh yeah. I totally understand that. You know, those were the good old days. You know, where they could pass out smokes on the street. Oh, my God. Those bring back some really fond memories. In addition, you could smoke on an aircraft.
Oh, no kidding. And my early flight, I flew on my first long-distance flight from Washington, D.C. to Chicago when I was 12 years old. And they passed out cigarettes with the meal. So you got a tray full of TV dinner quality food.
Yeah, yeah.
And, which was pretty good, you know, for a kid. I didn't mind eating a TV dinner every once in a while. And then they would always throw in a pack of cigarettes. And it was it was very nice. And people did not wear their pajamas like they do today on the airplane.
Yeah. Everybody used to dress up like they were going to Sunday church.
Absolutely. That was in fact, I told you I hung around with my grandparents. I started going across the country in railroad trains. First class rail travel was demanded that you be completely dressed up. So here I am, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. I'm wearing a monkey suit all day, every day. Now, the cool thing was that they made friends. My grandparents were very, very social, and they made a lot of friends in the bar cars and the cars that had the observation domes on the tops.
Oh, yeah. And that's what they were. Wasn't that called? They were the observation cars.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Yeah, yeah. It took me a while to put that together. I don't see them every day, and I don't think about them that often. But that's where we would spend the day, up there meeting new people that like to do the same things that my grandparents did, which were drink, tell tall tales, and maybe smoke. Talk some business and smoke. Absolutely.
Oh, and, man, you're bringing back some fond memories, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, it was a wonderful way to travel. The only thing is I would have preferred not to have to wear the monkey suit all the time. But
That was a small price to pay, though.
I got used to it pretty quickly. The food was fantastic. The oatmeal served for breakfast to a little kid on a train, in a Pullman dining car. Yeah. Was something to behold, something special that I've never been able to see duplicated or hear, a recipe for. I finally, a few years back, I decided to go on a hunt for the recipes that those chefs must have used.
Right.
And it was really a sight to behold, because at the end of a Pullman dining car, there was a very tiny kitchen with about maybe 10 black guys in it, all slinging food around in a choreographed method that allowed them to get a lot of food out the door, make it good quality stuff, and not bump into each other all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I found out after doing a lot of research that all of those recipes from the railroad chefs were all in their heads. None were written down that anybody knows. They were all kind of seat of the pants, and they're lost forever.
Oh, that's not a good, especially when I love oatmeal. So if you ever run across one,
yep,
let me know, because I grew up on oatmeal.
Well, this oatmeal is the likes of which you have never enjoyed before. This oatmeal was fantastic, and it was consistent across all the railroads that I rode when I was a kid. I was going to show you a sign. I had to take a picture of this sign somewhere down south. I think it might have been Oklahoma. When we stopped at a place, and I was going to the bathroom, and above my head was a sign that I thought was indicative.
Please don't spit, chew, and tobacco in the urinator.
Yeah.
What the heck is a urinator? Well, I know, but I mean, why? What is that, something different down south?
It was classy. It's classy. But it's hard for you to see, but written on the sign, there's something somebody wrote with an arrow towards the chew and an arrow towards the tobacco, and they wrote same thing. So, as if the guy who wrote the sign did not know.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Spit, yep. Chew and tobacco are the same. You were talking about you used to smoke non-filtered cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you miss not having to spit the little bits of tobacco out,
What I did was I tamped that cigarette down.
That's part of the process.
I would tamp that cigarette down really, really hard before I lit it up. And it was not a problem for me. I did not have that much tobacco actually entering my mouth.
Okay. Well, I really just a lot of memories around that, because my dad smoked Philip Morris regular. He was constantly picking tobacco out of his teeth.
Well, my father smoked Lucky Strikes, and my mother too, for a long time. I think she went to filters before he did. But I remember him going just a little. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's quite an art to get that little chunk of tobacco on the end of your tongue and then spit it out.
Absolutely. But it was something they had mastered. And frankly, that's a lost art now. We'll never see likes of it again.
Oh, yeah. Well, something, I suppose we better get to the old Medicare business here.
Yep, we should do that. I was going to say also, a lot of people wondered whether we were going to see any storms when we headed north from Austin, Texas, up to Wayne, Illinois. And I had never seen tornado destruction like I did on this trip for just a short period right north of the Red River in Oklahoma. We crossed over into Ardmore, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And we drove through a small town on the interstate that looked as though it was crushed, almost like you know, a giant had come along and squashed a building next to the road. Yeah. And there was sheet metal and corrugated steel scattered all over the place. And I didn't know why. And then it dawned on me that was a tornado that had gone through just a couple of days before. So,
well, you know, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, not so much Illinois, but that's the old traditional tornado alley.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So I have not had the assistance of the content curator. And so we may have a disjointed couple of episodes here, but I thought I'd start out with an article that I discovered saying it is time, or there comes a time in some people's lives when it is necessary to hire some live-in help or to have home health care or what they call as a home caregiver. And I grew up in an era and in a location with caretakers, not caregivers. So it's hard for me to get used to that word caregiver. Seems a little weird. But in any event, you know, you'd think I would be able to find my article. Randy's kind of laughing at me because I am having difficulty with all of my stuff I wanted to talk about. Oh, here we are. Okay. 6 clear signs that it's time to hire a home caregiver. And I want to discuss the caregiver aspect, and then I'm going to touch on how Medicare treats the charges that one might encounter for home caregiving. So the article begins, as you journey through life, you may find yourself faced with situations where you require assistance and support, especially as you age or encounter health challenges. Deciding when it's time to seek a home caregiver can be a delicate and significant decision. So there are 6 different signs that you might be ready, or you or a loved one might be ready to have a live-in caregiver. The first is assessing care needs. Before seeking caregiving services, it's important to conduct a thorough assessment of the individual's current abilities and limitations in various aspects of daily living. Consider factors such as mobility, personal care, medication management, and engagement in activities of daily living. Are there challenges in completing routine tasks independently, such as bathing, dressing, or meal preparation? Identifying specific areas where assistance is needed will not only help determine the level of care required, but also guide the selection of appropriate caregiving services. Number 2 out of 6, monitoring health changes. Regularly monitoring health changes in health and functionality is essential for proactive decision-making regarding caregiving services. Keep a vigilant eye on any signs of decline in physical or cognitive abilities, as well as changes in behavior or mood. Are there noticeable shifts in energy levels, appetite, or sleep patterns? Early detection of health problems allows for timely intervention and ensures that the individual receives the necessary support to maintain their overall well-being. By staying attuned to these changes, home caregivers can better anticipate and address evolving care needs, promoting the continuity of care and quality of life for the individual. Number 3. Addressing safety concerns. Safety should always be a primary consideration when deciding on caregiving services. Conduct a complete, comprehensive assessment of the home environment for potential hazards, especially if the individual has mobility problems or cognitive impairments. Are there obstacles that could pose a risk of falls or accidents? Are there proper lighting, handrails, grab bars installed to enhance safety? Implementing safety measures and interventions such as home modifications or assistive devices can help prevent accidents and ensure a secure living environment for the individual. Number 4, seeking professional guidance. Consulting with healthcare professionals is invaluable in making informed decisions about caregiving services. Physicians, geriatric specialists, and social workers can assess the individual's health status, functional abilities, and care needs, providing recommendations for appropriate support services. They can offer insights into medical conditions, medication management, and specialized care requirements, guiding caregivers in navigating complex healthcare systems and assessing available resources. Collaborating with professionals ensures a comprehensive approach to care planning and enhances the quality of support provided, ultimately optimizing the outcomes and promoting the individual's overall health and well-being. Recognizing changes in cognitive function. Wow, I forgot to, no, here we are. Cognitive decline is the next. That's number five out of the six selections here. Recognizing changes in cognitive function, such as memory loss, confusion, disorientation, and impaired decision-making is crucial in determining the necessity for caregiving services. Whether you're seeking caregiving services in Minnesota or another location, I'm thinking the author of this article lives in Minnesota, providers can offer specialized care and assistance tailored to the unique needs of individuals experiencing cognitive decline. These professionals offer supervision, ensuring optimal care and quality of life for those affected. Seeking caregiving services early can help mitigate the challenges associated with cognitive decline and provide essential support for both the individual and their loved ones. The final indicator, social withdrawal or isolation. Social withdrawal or isolation can serve as a powerful indicator that caregiving services are needed. If you or a loved one find yourselves pulling away from social interactions due to the overwhelming responsibilities of caregiving, it is time to consider seeking outside assistance. Isolation can lead to feelings of loneliness and depression and can even exacerbate existing health issues. Recognizing this withdrawal as a sign of needing support is crucial. Caregiving services not only provide practical assistance, but they also offer companionship and emotional connection. By acknowledging the impact of social withdrawal and embracing support services, individuals can prioritize their well-being and ensure they receive the care and companionship necessary for a fulfilling life. Is it time to hire a home caregiver? In summary, deciding when to seek caregiving services requires careful consideration of various factors, including current needs, health status, safety risks, and available resources. By assessing these aspects thoughtfully and seeking professional advice when needed, individuals and their families can make informed decisions that support their overall health, well-being, and quality of life. Remember, caregiving is not a journey to embark on alone, and there are many resources to support the networks available to assist you every step of the way. All right, so now we've learned about maybe when you can tell that you are ready to hire a caregiver or that somebody that you're concerned with is in need of professional caregiving services. And then we have to figure out what Medicare is going to do to assist you in that regard. Now, I am using equipment that isn't quite as well. Here we go. Okay. I was concerned about my phone because I wanted to use our What's Covered app, but I couldn't find the phone, but I've got a mess of cords, most of which are not well suited to the podcasting arena here. And I'm going to have to go shopping before our next recording episode, but I wanted to find that What's Covered app. And I wanted to search for home caregiving. So let's see what the app says. I'm in the search window and I'm going to go home, H-O-M-E, home health services. So this would be hiring a home caregiver, whether it be part-time, just coming in once or twice a day, or whether it be full-time. My mother for years had a full-time caregiver living with her, administering medications, and she had a lot of medications, and helping her with her mobility and her bathing. And so I know whereof I speak when it comes to hiring home health, help for the home health needs. So on the What's Covered app from Medicare on my phone, I typed in H-O-M-E, and it popped right up. It's home health services, and they are covered by Medicare. Medicare Part A and or Medicare Part B cover eligible home health services as long as you need part-time or intermittent skilled services and as long as you're homebound. which means, and here are the definitions, you have trouble leaving your home without help, like using a cane, a wheelchair, a walker, or crutches, especially transportation or help from another person because of an illness or injury. Leaving your home isn't recommended because of your condition, or you're normally unable to leave your home because it's a major effort. Covered home health services include the following: medically necessary part-time or intermittent skilled nursing care, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech language pathology services, medical social services, part-time intermittent home health aides, only if you're also getting skilled nursing care at the same time, injectable osteoporosis drugs for women, durable medical equipment, and medical supplies for use at the home. A doctor or other healthcare provider, like a nurse practitioner, must have a face-to-face visit with you before certifying that you need home healthcare services. A doctor or other healthcare provider must order your care, and Medicare-certified home health agency must provide, in most cases, part-time or intermittent means you may be able to get skilled nursing care and home health aid services up to 8 hours a day with a maximum of 28 hours per week. You may be able to get more frequent care for a short time after if your doctor or other health care provider determines it's necessary. Medicare does not pay for 24-hour-a-day care at your home, meals delivered to your home, homemaking services like house cleaners, I guess, shopping and cleaning that are not related to your plan of care. Medicare also does not pay for custodial or personal care that helps you with the daily living activities like bathing, dressing, or using the bathroom. So this app is very instructive. It goes on and on. I haven't read everything about it, but the app is useful in determining whether or not Medicare is likely to pay for any of the services. And I'll tell you what else is likely. It's likely that we're going to have some commercials right now. And without a cough button, I'm going to have to rely on Randy to determine the proper place to insert the commercials. And I'm just going to be very quiet. I hope that was enough to make Randy's devices over there target the silent area of this podcast recording, because when I have my cough button and I turn that off in order to cough or swear or throw things, it sets off an indicator on his side of the screen and somehow lets him know that we have stopped recording. So this time I'm going to return to my pile of uncurated content. And I'm going to say that we've got a little article here that our friend Roy Brotherhood provided me with a while back. Three big changes coming to Medicare in 2025 and what they will mean for you. CMS, that's the government agency that runs Medicare, just announced two major changes for 2025 that you're going to want to know about. But now, why did the headline say three and the article says two? Next year, Medicare will also dramatically alter the maximum amount beneficiaries will need to pay out of pocket for their covered medications. So this is what's going to happen in 2025. Number one, a crackdown on agents and brokers who sell three types of Medicare policies. Currently, salespeople sometimes get incentives like exotic vacations and hefty bonuses when they enroll Medicare beneficiaries into private insurers' Medicare Advantage plans, alternatives to traditional Medicare, this article says, or Medigap, Medicare Supplement. Actually, it says Medicare Supplemental. That's completely inaccurate. Or Part D prescription drug plans. Nobody gets paid for those or gets sent on vacations. And in fact, they say exotic vacations here. The vacations that you're sent on or that you've earned if you've sold a lot of these products are not all that exotic. Basically, spending all day in a room full of other insurance types. I can think of a lot more exotic things to do than to listen to speakers and accept awards and, you know, pat each other on the back. Anyway, the government hopes to end sales incentives in 2025 for Medicare Advantage and drug plans. This announcement is a big win for seniors because it strengthens protections against deceptive and high-pressure marketing practices. Well, it doesn't entirely do that because they still pay a commission. And the ultimate reward for selling a product is the compensation that you get once the product is sold. In the insurance business, that is a commission. So the government has a 1,327-page final rule for Medicare that applies to their 2025 operations. And they want to ensure that the agent and broker compensation reflect only legitimate activities required by agents and brokers in selling those plans. That means that the salespeople can no longer be offered incentives to enroll people. Now, that's a major change because not only do the agents get a commission for selling a product to an individual, but then they get a bonus for going back to that same individual and getting them to complete a risk assessment form that will maybe tell the government that the person is sicker than average. If the person, the client, is in fact sicker than average, if they have medical conditions that are worse than expected, then the insurance company that the agent works for can take that form and give it to the government and say, pay us even more money. The government writes a big check for Medicare Advantage plans that are sold by an insurance company. If the insurance company proves that their clients are actually sicker than average, then the government has promised to pay even more. So there are bonuses on top of commissions on top of bonuses. Number two change for 2025 is a new mid-year notification to Medicare Advantage policy holders, reminding them about their plan's unused supplemental benefits. That is coming because people in those plans often don't take advantage of some benefits. This is somewhat surprising since Medicare Advantage plans often tout the coverage that they provide and traditional Medicare can't, which are dental, vision, and hearing and fitness benefits. Most Medicare Advantage plans offer at least one supplemental benefit, and the median number provided is 23. Oh, man. Randy and I have talked a lot about whether the people will come and take you to your doctor's appointments and will they take you to lunch and so forth. So some of those 23 supplemental benefits must be pretty esoteric, but in fact, most people, most clients of Medicare Advantage plans are not offered most of those other supplemental benefits. So in February 2024, a study discovered that 3 out of 10 Medicare Advantage members did not use any of their supplemental benefits in the prior year. And the government says that its 2025 rule said that some plans have indicated that enrollee utilization of many supplemental benefits is low. So people cite supplemental benefits as a reason for choosing a Medicare Advantage plan over traditional Medicare, but in reality, a lot of them don't even use those supplemental benefits. Starting in 2025, Medicare Advantage plans will be required to send policyholders each July a personalized mid-year enrollee notification of unused supplemental benefits. It will list all supplemental benefits the person hasn't used, the scope and out-of-pocket cost for claiming each one, and instructions on how to access the benefits, and a customer service number to call for more information. So these people that were interviewed say that it might be better if the plan sent the letters in March to give people more time during the year to actually avail themselves of the benefits. So why aren't Medicare Advantage beneficiaries using their supplemental benefits? No one really knows because there's no good data about this. I'm going to speculate. My speculation is that those supplemental benefits are not as good as they're cracked up to be. For instance, if you've got a dental benefit for a plan that costs you nothing at all, and you go to one of the dentists in their very limited network of dentists, you might find that that dentist is a recent immigrant to the United States or a recent dental school graduate that really doesn't know his business that well. You might find that your dental benefit is so limited as to not be very attractive. Or you've got a dentist that you've been using for many, many years and you don't want to switch. I can understand why you wouldn't want a strange pair of hands in your mouth. So that's my speculation as to why some people don't use the optional benefits that their Medicare Advantage plan provides for them. And the number three change for 2025 is the new $2,000 annual cap on out-of-pocket prescription costs. In 2024, generally speaking, your out-of-pocket spending on prescriptions tops out at about $3,300. I don't know how they know that. It's very early in the year. Let's see. If your, once your out-of-pocket spending hits about $3,300, you qualify for Medicare's catastrophic coverage and pay nothing for your covered Part D drugs for the rest of the year. In 2023, you still owed 5% of your drug costs. In 2024, you hit a certain limit, $3,300, you're into catastrophic coverage, and you pay nothing more. Come 2025, people with Part D drug plans won't have to pay more than $2,000 out of pocket, thanks to provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act. This person that's being interviewed, Lipschultz, says, I think this is a very big deal. The new rule applies only to medications covered by your Part D plan, though, and it does not apply to out-of-pocket spending on Medicare Part B, B as in Bravo drugs. Part B as in Bravo drugs are typically vaccinations, injections, injections a doctor administers, and outpatient prescription drugs. So the $2,000 cap will be indexed to the growth per capita for Part D costs, so it may well rise each year after 2025. That $2,000 cap will likely save money for some Medicare beneficiaries, particularly the ones taking expensive brand name drugs. If the $2,000 cap causes Part D, as in dog, insurers to cut back on the prescriptions they cover, there's going to be a lot of heat from legislators and others to hold the plans accountable. Well, if they can't make a profit with that cap starting in 2025, something will burst at the seams, because you cannot tell one segment of the economy that they are not allowed to make a profit without allowing them to seek their profits elsewhere. So the advice for people looking to enroll in Part D as in Delta plans in 2025, review your choices carefully using the Medicare Plan Finder. That's what I do with my clients, to see whether the prescriptions you take will be covered by the plan. If your plan won't cover a medication that your doctor wants to prescribe, ask the plan for an exception with backup from your treating doctor. It's worth a try, he says. So, Randy, I've tarried far too long, and it's time for us to close up shop.
We definitely need to land the plane. But before I do that, there's always a couple things I like to do. Number one on the list is, even though Doug is living only 700 feet above sea level now in Illinois, you can still reach him using this email address, dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Don't forget, as evidenced by the fact he's in Illinois for the summer, he is licensed nationwide in every other state in the union to help you with your Medicare supplement planning. Check us out at the website, medicareforthelazyman.com. We would appreciate it in your wanderings through the internet if you could find a place to drop a couple reviews for the content that we produce. Doug puts a lot of work into it, and as you might imagine with this type of work, the numbers, it's all about the numbers. Last but certainly not least, thank you for joining us. You could have been a number of different places, and you weren't. You were with us, Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And if you weren't checking your watch, you just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. No more. Now he's living right above sea level in Illinois in his fortress of solitude on the East Coast. So, well, I guess that's not East Coast. I guess that's considered Midwest.
It is.
So anywho, thanks for joining us. And I am going to turn it over to Doug Jones for any final comments he may have.
Well, thank you, Randy. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. I will look forward eagerly to your participation in our next podcast episode. Bye-bye.